talked to Len Bergstein, talked to Paul Phillips, and it turns out I really need to talk to Betsy Johnson. I didn't think I would, but her dad may be the key to why Vic got so close to the tribes. Mm-hmm. And so that's the best hypothesis, so I'll need to talk to her too. So, tracking them all down.
Having any luck with Kulongoski or Chuck Beggs?
Chuck Beggs I got.
Okay.
And then Vic kept, for all of his sessions in the legislature, kept scrapbooks. And so Chuck has been there a long time. You know, there's columns by him in 71 and 69 and just all these kinds of things. And he looks very bit different in the pictures for the columns.
Well, yes.
Yeah, the ones that I'm going to try to track down, but I don't have that much hope for, is I really need to talk to Kitzhaber. It would be great to talk to Goldschmidt. But who knows? I did hear from Kerry Timchuk yesterday that Jerry Frank was bragging that he was at a lunch that had Tom Imison, John Kitzhaber, Neil Goldschmidt, and a couple of other people. So, but that's also Jerry Frank bragging, so who knows?
Yes.
Who knows?
He's starting to fade.
Yeah, I'll need to talk to him, too. There's a couple of things with when Vic proposes a sales tax. That I've got hints that Jerry and did some things that there's a lot of people who are very unhappy about, so I've got to figure those things out. But he's also the closest I'll be able to get to Hatfield. That's the way it is. He's 92, and that's just the way it is. The oldest person I interviewed for this actually was, remember in Medford, Lou Hannum, who was the mayor?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Turned 100. And at his 100th birthday, he told a story about Vic. And so my dad called me up, and so I interviewed Lou, and his daughter found the relevant documents in his papers. So there you go. Doing all these 91, 92-year-olds, and I got a 100-year-old in there as well.
I didn't realize Lee was that old. He did run for the House when I was down there.
Yeah, yeah. So all this is going to be, it's archival quality recording. It's all going to go into Pacific's archives eventually.
Okay.
I take it and I snip it up by topics, and then I don't do a transcript because we don't speak grammatically. So I do summaries of what's there. So, when did you start reporting where you were running into Vic?
Even though I came to the state in the fall of 1979, the first time I encountered him was the special session of August 1980, almost exactly 35 years ago.
Right.
This week.
Yeah. And anything stand out? You know, this is the special sessions are beginning to come because 79, that session has been described as, you know, the tax system is working. We're scared.
There was a huge surplus, as I recall.
Giant surplus.
Ironically, I recall Vic said we shouldn't create this whole new property tax rebate program. We should just spend what we need to and rebate the rest of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, he didn't veto it, as I recall. He let it become law without signature. But he lived long enough, obviously, to say, I told you so, within the confines of his own tenure as governor.
Absolutely.
But 1980, yes, the economy was starting to falter. I remember the mills in Douglas County, where I worked, actually laid off people that spring. Obviously, state revenues, income tax, fell by, what was it, $100 million or something like that. And, so they called in the legislature to both do a mixture of cuts. And he did one that it seems hard to believe now, but Oregon did not have withholding.
Right.
And,
right.
He instituted that for in a 6-month period.
Yeah.
which was a easy way to pick up some money. So yeah. he did do that.
Yeah.
And that's where I first encountered him. I do know, aside from all the serious stuff that, I'm not sure how he would, because I think the '79 legislature passed a bill that banned smoking in public buildings, so he would sometimes grab a smoke outside his office, but if there was a photographer anywhere near it, he'd snuff it out really quick.
Oh, yeah?
The hallway.
Yeah.
Well, not, yeah. It's really not the hallway, it's the area just right outside the house chamber.
Right.
That's, I mean, there are a couple instances like that. Because he didn't actually, if I recall correctly, didn't make his public appearances until the legislature was there a full week, and he made his appearances.
Yeah.
They largely follow what he wanted to do.
Yeah, yeah. There's a pattern with these sessions, except for one that I'm going to say what you got on, where there was just a lot of planning that went ahead. And things might go off the rails or not.
Yeah, not really.
But, you know, you had a one-day session or a seven-day session, but, you know, it was pretty discreet.
Right, and there was a point where in the Senate, some of the Democratic lierals thought there was too much being cut, and so they papered that over.
Yeah.
So that the session in I know which session you're talking about, but
exactly.
We'll get to that later. But,
exactly.
But it was pretty much a session that ended on his terms.
So. Yeah. Yeah.
And that was about the extent of my contact till we get rolling into the 1981 session when he proposes a $250 million tax.
Right.
Increase package.
Yeah.
To balance that budget.
So were you working in the legislature at that point?
I was in Roseburg. In that era, they'd let me come up occasionally, and then toward the end of the session, they'd let me stay. I do recall I did go up there because one of the House Revenue Committee hearings on the tax package was going to be in Roseburg, and I took advantage of Denny Miles' invitation about, well, the governor really doesn't discriminate among media.
Mm-hmm.
So I did take the opportunity to do an advance interview with him, published the day of the hearing.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was very different from California, where Jerry Brown, then as now as governor, unless you worked for the Los Angeles Times or the B or one of the biggies, California, I worked for a paper down there that, even though today it would be in a large area and has a large circulation, it kind of, statewide, it's kind of ignored you.
Yeah.
It was a very different, plus Jerry Brown, the personality being Jerry Brown.
Oh, yeah.
But no, Vic was willing to take on questions. Now, I remember he was compared unfavorably to McCall because he was not quite as florid in his answers, but what you see is what you get. My first real exposure was this two-year cycle, which coincided with the recession. And then after the legislature, if I recall, it was then the longest session that just dipped into August. Little we know that they get longer, but I think the legislature gave him about 2/3 of the new taxes he wanted. And then the bottom fell out of the economy.
So we moved towards this long special session.
Right.
So here's the issue that I'm trying to figure out. Vic had had special sessions before. There was a lot of planning. He lined all his ducks up. Talking to Hardy Myers, the Speaker of the House. Talking to Paul Hanneman, the Republican leader in the House. Talking to Barbara Roberts, who was sitting on the relevant committees. None of them recall any talk or plan with the governor's office before that session started. Nothing. And it ends up being the long session.
Well, if I recall correctly, he wanted to cut a much larger amount out of the budget, $120 million.
Yeah.
The Senate, particularly in the Senate, the Democrats did not want they want to come out half as much.
Yeah. Yeah.
And make up the difference through other means. And there was that kind of tug of war for a while.
Yeah.
And they finally were about to close a deal when somehow in Richmond, he doesn't take credit for it, but he was one of the ones that he was then the legislature's mm-hmm. revenue officer. And they discovered the economic projections were off. They were going to be off another $100 million.
Yeah.
And so they took a time out for a week, not counting it against right. the session clock, while they figured out whether, I believe the compromise was going to be 3%. It turned out to be 8%
mm-hmm.
for one year. But yeah, this tussle about cuts, and then the Senate did have to go up in terms of its cuts. Although I think eventually Atiyah got all those cuts, although he didn't get some until the following session.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, the Senate went up and they said, okay, we'll acquiesce the $90 million. I'm recalling the figures from memory, but I remember mm-hmm. it's one of these. And it was an election year, of course.
Yeah, it was an election year. In that session, given your years of watching special sessions, especially the person who broke Vic's record, it's Kulongoski, or it's Kitzhaber, the 2002s.
Yeah, they were fine.
They just kept going and going and going yeah. and going.
But that one seemed to be like the endless session, didn't have a plan to break the stalemate.
Yeah.
People were pointing fingers at each other saying, you know, it's your... Well, you know, they want some Republican buy-in to raise yeah. taxes, which there were maybe one or two measures that were acceptable to mm-hmm. a couple of them. I mean, I mm-hmm. don't recall any of them getting more than a handful of Republican votes. They did do one of these speed-ups, mm-hmm. the last possible, which resulted in today's withholding schedule.
Yeah.
I believe quarterly, which they ended up
yeah.
as one of those measures. But most of the votes, if I recall, for the tax increases were cast by Democrats and maybe a few key Republicans like Van Fleet and
yeah.
Burroughs from Eugene.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, it just seemed to drag on with I am, and the House start putting up various tax increases, and they'd actually fail on the floor and they'd mm-hmm. pull it back and
mm-hmm.
see what they picked. Eventually there was a group named after the now renamed Mallory Hotel, where a group of these people met. I remember kids are describing it as it was a group of Republicans and Democrats to see what they could actually tax and stand up with. It wasn't mm-hmm. much of a coherent policy, but it was a way they muddled out. But
yeah. Do you think, given the intense, there were institutional things with the House and the Senate, there were party things going on, there was, you know, all this stuff, and then in the middle, it's going to be $100 million more. Do you think that advanced planning would have shortened this session by an appreciable amount, or do you think it was just a train wreck waiting to happen?
I think it was a train wreck waiting to happen, looking back on it. They might have shrugged it a little bit. There wouldn't have been quite as much stalemate, but I think definitely the fact that they were off in their projection galvanized both sides, realizing.
Yeah, can't pussyfoot around.
We can't pussyfoot around anymore. Yeah. From the governor's standpoint, he had to swallow a bigger tax increase than he probably wanted. And
right.
Democrats had to swallow bigger cuts than they wanted.
Yeah.
But that, within that, yeah, it forced the decision. It still took about a couple of weeks, if I recall.
Yeah.
Before they closed the deal. As I recall, the governor actually, in signing it, those bills, he let them become law without a signature.
Mm-hmm.
In more recent years, we kind of, saying, well, he was the Republican governor willing to raise taxes. And he was, but, you know, he also had political mm-hmm. calculations in mind for that that year, knowing that, I can't even remember the sequence of Kennedy announcements, but certainly, you know, Kulongoski.
Kulongoski's after the session.
Right.
Because the big thing was Jim Weaver was supposed to be the candidate.
Right.
And apparently he called Kuligoski like in the middle of the night and said, I ain't going to run. But
yeah, I remember the deal was Kuligoski was going to run for his congressional seat.
Yeah, yeah.
I've told Chad, I said, if you had won, you might still be there.
Yeah, exactly.
But
well, except Ted, I think, gets bored after about 4 or 5 years. So
yeah,
he might have moved on.
Yeah, given the nature of that seat.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, that would easily have been the case. But,
yeah.
But it was clear that Ted was probably going to run for something.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, in bad times, the incumbent takes, whether it's justified or not, takes some of the blame. And so,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Vic was, as I recall, seen as vulnerable.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So did you follow that election?
Yes.
Okay.
I covered all three. They agreed to three debates, Portland City Club, something in Eugene, and then in the, you remember the Labor Hall in Medford?
Yeah.
Terribly small place, but they actually had a debate there.
Yeah. What do you remember about the debates?
Interestingly, Atiyah came out swinging, and Kuligoski kind of held back till the very last debate in terms of his personal style.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, he took kind of the gloves off, but probably at the last and least.
Mm-hmm.
It was about a month beforehand. And I remember Kuligoski, Gonin came out with a poll that showed that it was essentially a dead heat 1 month before the election.
Mm-hmm.
But as it turned out, I think it was also the point where most people decided to stick with the incumbent rather than go with Kuligoski, because you know what the final result of that was. But as I said, I covered all three of them. Vic came out, pretty much like the underdog he was. He campaigned pretty aggressively as well.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think if there are any particular gaffes that were made, and I don't recall any.
No, I don't think gaffes. The thing that sticks out in the minds of people like Denny Miles, who's the campaign manager, when they went to Medford, Kuligoski brought down all the state labor officials and kind of muscled out the local labor officials from the best seats, which Denny's interpretation is that ticked off the labor people down there. So they... You know, the support wasn't as strong for Kuligoski or whatever because of that, but it's kind of seating arrangement issues.
One thing I would have noted in retrospect, he did a campaign appearance the next morning in Douglas County, and he was driven by a supporter to, it was Southern Douglas County, it was Myrtle Creek or something.
Mm-hmm.
I ended up having to drive him to Roseburg, where another campaign supporter was. So maybe I should realize that they were actually running low on money.
Yeah.
Despite the fact of what their polls were showing.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got all the money stuff, so I can look and see that was doing it. You know, there's always a fight. How do you balance all that and things?
The irony was that Tia, when he ended up spending more than $1 million, it was considered scandalous, and then finally in the next election, when they're choosing his successor, both candidates moved by that barrier pretty far.
Yeah. I was looking at the amount that he spent that was a record, and the equivalent now would be it's chicken feed. It's like $2.5 million for a statewide race.
That's
that's an entry fee. But that was the record at that point. So a real shift. In September, there's another special session.
Oh, yes. I came back from a vacation to go cover that.
Uh-huh.
Atiyah gives a very well-crafted speech, and he did buy in with the Democrats at least some of the Democrats on this one.
Mm-hmm.
Grant and Terrence is the one that struck his reaction, you know, the safe raid.
Yeah, yeah.
And you, because even though Grant was close to Ted, Grant said, this is an excellent way to bow. And of course, Kulongoski was opposing it for different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
As did Kitzhaber, even though obviously 12 years later the Supreme Court comes to a different conclusion. But
yeah.
But yeah, at that point, until Kitzhaber's 2002 special sessions, where that one went well into September, mm-hmm. yeah, it was on the verge of the opening of the campaign, and you know, that political implications weren't lost on anybody.
Yeah.
Even though it was like Labor Day weekend.
Yeah, yeah, but it was there. Fascinating, Straub called a special session at the same time in 78.
Right.
And so
I wasn't here then, but yes, I remember.
Just looking at those kinds of things, it's a lot of chutzpah to do that. With the safe raid, what was your sense about how people in the legislature responded to that? When I was talking to Paul Hanneman, who was one of the leaders that Vic first introduced it to, he said he and Tony Meeker looked at it and said, but you can't do that. And Hardy Myers and, I can't remember the president of the Senate was, Fred Hurd maybe?
Fred Hurd.
Yeah.
Fred.
They were just silent. But it's
Fred said he checked with a couple of key Democrats, including Fletcher, and before he threw his weight behind it.
Yeah. That particular meeting when Vic unveiled it to the legislative leadership, he had Dave Frommeyer just standing in the hall. I thought you'd have a question, Dave. Over here. And that carried a lot of weight.
Dave still, years later, Dave was still sore about how the Supreme Court ruled on that.
Oh, yeah.
12 years later.
Yeah. Well, and Kulongoski is eventually the Attorney General who has to write the check back.
Right.
And I don't know the exact amount, but it's like $260 million or something.
$265, if I recall. It was supposed to be $280, and then Brady Adams trimmed off $15 because nobody's satisfied with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I gather Ted had Tom Ballmer negotiate the details.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, it was Kulongoski ended up settling that.
Yeah. But it saves a bacon.
It balanced the budget so that Atiyah could go into re-election.
Yeah.
Without another festering crisis on his hands.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And I guess, I remember Douglas County, I remember some Democrats saying that when Tia proposed show guts, they didn't kind of like Kulongoski's reaction about, that sounded like spoiler sport, that he didn't have anything of his own. Not that he could have, but.
Yeah.
So it might have struck the public the same way.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how private image was probably more of a factor than the actual details of the thing.
Right. That brings up another point. This is your first real gubernatorial election you're following, wire to wire. We're seeing a shift in politics at that point that really solidifies by the mid-90s, where a place like Douglas County is never going to support a Democrat. But people like Ted, who's in Lane County, feels he has a real shot at places like that. He's going around. What did you see of that dynamic in 82 and moving forward as kind of the party nature shifts in different parts of the state?
Well, I Ted campaign pretty frequently in Douglas County, hoping to get the mill worker vote, not realizing that the environmental issues hadn't yet surfaced to the degree that later in the decade with the Spotted Owl would crystallize those. But he felt particularly someone Roseburg and then Coos Bay that that he had a shot that vote.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Tia was more identified with Washington County. So.
Right. Even after being in office that long. Yeah.
But no, there was still perceived to be competition, but I could see. I mean, it was clear by the end of the decade when I think the registration in Douglas County, it got to about evening. I remember Kitzhaber's last election for the Senate, he ran 17 percentage points ahead of his party registration, which kind of foretold that the next person who was going to hold that seat was probably going to be Republican.
Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't have known who it was at that point, but
yeah,
I noticed, just purely on the figures during the decade I was in Douglas County, a huge, at least on paper, Democrat registration advantage just simply disappeared.
Just disappeared, yeah.
Somehow in like 85 or 86 it disappeared.
Yeah.
Trying to think in that election. Yeah, well, of course, at Tijuana, all those counties.
He went everywhere.
He won everywhere, yeah.
He went everywhere. In that last month, what happened?
I'm sure money had something to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
Ted spent maybe like a third of what his eventual total was. I've noticed this pattern since, but the minds start to gel, or stances start to gel in that last month, and they said we'd rather have with a couple of exceptions, most notably Hatfield. Oregonian seemed to like a little gray in their governors, and they usually like to have somebody who's been there a while. Ted has kind of burst onto the stage 2 years early when he was in the Senate race. So, he was the darling of the Liberal Democrats at that time. He still wasn't. Whereas, of course, Vicky had run that first time in 74 and in 78.
Yeah.
So he was certainly a familiar figure. And that's kind of what I think Oregonians decided. They'd rather have somebody familiar than somebody who just burst down the scene, because Kulongoski was in his early 40s. And he since told me I wasn't really ready to be governor back when he ran.
Yeah, when I talked to him, that's what he said. Very clear about that. And he didn't have any intention of doing that until later came. But he was just kind of the guy. I can't remember who he beat in the primary.
It was Don Clark.
Clark, there we go.
And Jerry Rust, I think, actually ran too.
Yeah, but Ted said he looked around and said, "Don Clark's going to get the nomination." And so,
I remember one of my Roseburg friends who was close to Kulongoski said, "Well, we don't know what's going to happen in November, but we damn well know he's going to win the primary, so we're going to going to the primary election."
Good.
Party night.
Yep, perfect, perfect. So Vic comes out of that with a record win, basically. Another thing on Kulongoski, apparently Jeff Mapes from then on wrote about him as Ted Kulongoski, who lost by the largest margin. And so Ted was so happy when Sizemore came along in 98. Moving into 1983... there's a whole bunch of stuff that's going on, but this is also when Vic starts taking off on a lot of international trips. Did you cover those or see how people reacted back here as he went off and did those?
I had some inkling of that. In Douglas County, I wasn't viewed very favorably because obviously the governor is trying to court industries that are outside of wood products, but but I knew he'd been working on it. You probably remember Black and Baker's columns that label him Traitor Vic.
Right, and Chuck actually takes credit for coining that and passing it off. Yeah.
By by the time it's used, Governor Chuck's working for AP, so
yeah.
He's not writing columns. But
yeah.
I guess that crystallized with the change in the unitary method,
right.
Taxation, which yeah. came about.
That's a year later. Before, yeah.
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 Although it was shown there are benefits to Oregon companies that export, but the real focus seemed to be on the NEC.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was not well received in the part of the state I was working in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think Bob Hunter, who later went to Medford, but I remember wrote an editorial saying, because he was a city editor in Roseburg, and he said, Vicatia has shown how to be successful as governor of Washington County, or
uh-huh.
something like that. So that's kind of tenor of something.
Yeah.
Reaction to his foreign. Of course, years later, you can see that those in a different context, but at the time where I was working in the southern part of the state, it wasn't seen as a lark, but it was kind of seen as chasing pie in the sky or something like that, until something actually did happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Were you covering any of the fishery stuff going on?
No.
Because it's, I think, by 84, they're burning Vic and JD and Effigy in Charleston, which is kind of fun. So anything stick out in that 83 session to you?
Well, interesting enough, even though they debated a sales tax, which they put in the ballot in a poison pill form, I don't remember the governor exerting very much leadership in that. He did, and they only had one hearing, he did propose the net receipts tax as part of his budget. I remember Bill Markham joked about now he doesn't have to run for re-election, he can propose tax new tax increases like that.
Yep.
$600 million, and I think, of all people, Wally Priestley, Liberal Democrat from Portland, kind of liked the idea, but kind of flopped.
Yeah, doesn't go anywhere.
He didn't. And as they call it, he didn't. I remember what the legislature did was pretty much they extended the tax surcharge that they had passed a year earlier for two more years, and therefore that's how they balanced the budget. And
yeah.
Didn't need the net receipts tax, and he didn't play much of a role, I recall, in trying to craft a sales tax proposal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not that session.
No, it comes
later.
Yeah, later on, that he makes that a centerpiece. Okay.
I do remember, and this is not related to some of the main issues, but I remember he pointed somebody at LCDC who later became mayor of Newport, or it was Clyde Hamstreet, whose surfaces later. But anyway, Hamstreet kind of, in his first confirmation hearing, recites some of the stuff that critics say about LCDC. And then I remember LB Day and Pat Amadeo take him to the woodshed saying, this is what you need to say if you're going to get confirmed by a Democratic Senate, and the committee was headed by Kitzhaber.
Right.
Well, LB was on it, so he went back and said all the things you expect a nominee to say.
Yeah.
This was also the time when, if I recall correctly, in 82 there were still a lot of comp plans that were not acknowledged by the state. And Atiyah said something like, it's time to get this all done. He proposed something like a term called substantial compliance, which, of course, he didn't offer a lot of specifics on it, what is that supposed to mean? Finally, the legislature came up with something. They didn't use that term, but they basically said, we'll measure the plan against what the goals are trying to accomplish. Eventually, all the plans did get acknowledged, although I think the last one got 80, late 85, early 86.
Yeah.
It was Coos County, I think.
Yeah.
But,
Talking about appointments, did you cover the appointments? I mean, in here, Vic is, Betty Roberts shows up on the Supreme Court and then goes away because she resigns. But there's just a lot of appointments going on. In his first term, it was remarkable the people who'd seen other governors come in. He didn't really clean house. There are a couple of people that he got rid of. But
I asked Ed Sullivan about that, the guy who worked on Straub's staff.
Yeah.
And I said, Ed, you know, I just came from California where, you know, oh no, at that point, Brown had already been governor for
yeah.
a while. But
yeah.
I asked Ed, how come this doesn't end? He says, well, it's mostly tradition. This happened before I came to Oregon, but of course they had the fight about the former Supreme Court Chief Justice
mm-hmm.
being named to an energy position. Turned out they had kind of conflicts, and
mm-hmm.
Jason Bowe felt his nose was rubbed the wrong way
mm-hmm.
on that appointment. So, one I remember, Jim Sexton, he was named by the governor to another term as Water Resources Director, but
mm-hmm.
there were. He had rubbed some people the wrong way, and he ended up not getting confirmed.
Yeah.
Although, I think he ended up at the PUC at for a position that was paying more than what
yeah.
was.
Yeah.
But part of that, I understand, though, that there's an Oregonian reporter who kind of made it a crusade, and actually some legislators said that they were a little embarrassed because they were twisting some of the facts. Although, I don't recall how hard Atiyah really fought to keep him. He'd been in
mm-hmm.
that job for a couple of
mm-hmm.
rounds, since apparently it had a fixed term. I mean, some of these.
Yeah. And talking to his appointments person, her main strategy that Vic told her to do is figure out when the terms are up. And then, you know, we figure out if we replace or have the person who's in there put their name in the hat or whatever. But
he sure changed the economic development director.
Yeah, that was one of the ones that was in almost instantaneous.
And the other one was what today's, I mean, it was executive then. He changed the director there two, three times.
Yeah.
I mean, it eventually became Yunker, but
yeah.
who later take the same job at Kitzhard administration.
Right, but after getting fired by Barbara Roberts.
Barbara Roberts, yes.
Which he told me. it was great.
Oh,
I said to him, are you sure it wasn't Patricia McKay? He said, oh no, I got along well with her. Has you heard why Yunker says he was fired?
I didn't press him directly. I think it is possible that he did not want the archives building she was pushing to be on Goldschmidt's list of Goldschmidt loved to build things.
Yeah.
Goldschmidt gave it to her anyway.
Yeah.
And there might have been some other Secretary of State spending items kind of like that. The only thing that sticks out to me was the pre-skirmishing on the archives. Man, this has nothing to do with the construction, which later
right.
became
right.
a controversy in itself.
Right.
But
the main story that he sticks with when he told me is, because Barbara Roberts, in her last 2 years, was able to go to all of those weekly meetings Vic would have at the department heads. And she told John, when she fired him, that John was young enough to know better when those other guys told dirty jokes. They're too old to change, but you should have known better. Did you follow the Supreme Court appointments at all?
Well, a little bit. I mean, I knew about Carson. I'm not sure what the backstory would have been about Gillette, but.
Well, I talked to Bob Jones, who is also one of these people who's appointed.
Right. He was. I mean, he was on the court too.
And so he talked about, and I've heard this kind of from other people, Jack Faust, for instance, that there was kind of a line of them who were all kind of expecting to be on the Supreme Court, and it was expected on the other side that these this would be who you'd get. And so it surprised me that Gillette is so late in the process. But in any case, there they go. But then I was when I was talking to the appointments person, she was talking about how when Barbara Roberts, or when Betty Roberts kind of comes in there, she then had to call a number of people and tell them they weren't going to be on the Supreme Court. And it's the thing that's surprising to me is Vic, and through the appointments process, they actually did a pretty wide net on a lot of things. But it seems the Supreme Court was basically, the succession was set, and they just stuck with it all the way to the end. So it's a different pattern than you see with other appointments. So.
Well, I there wasn't much thought that Wally was going to end up in that line at some point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. And I also talking to Bob Jones. Vic apparently saved his federal appointment. So it was just kind of interesting to see, even after Vic was out of office. So we get to 84, the unitary tax. That's actually the first chapter I've written in the book. There was always a sense that 85 was going to be when they were going to seriously talk about tax reform. And the unitary tax is going to be in there. I've got a great quote from, I think it's like the end of the legislative session in 83. Frank Ivancy is talking to a committee, and he says, "I've just been to Japan. We have to get rid of the unitary tax." And they don't really know what the hell he's talking about. But it gets in, put in there. So there's sales tax ideas. There's property tax limitation ideas. There's income tax. They're all mixed together.
Yeah.
When did you become aware that the unitary tax is going to kind of take on a life of its own?
Oh, I think late 83. I mean, aside from the soap opera that was the sales tax,
mm-hmm.
that was still going on,
mm-hmm.
I heard that there was some agitation from business interests that
mm-hmm.
this shit take its place apart from the
mm-hmm.
the main sales tax reform drama,
mm-hmm.
and that was reinforced by some of the same folks who also wanted to see Japanese investment come over.
Yeah.
Again.
Yeah.
So that's when I became aware of it. I mean, as far as the details, I think that only came about earlier. Before it actually happened in 84, but
yeah,
I would say, you know.
Yeah, it's like they didn't put the plan together until like June, and
so
at the end of July is the session.
Something like that.
Yeah. There's been a lot of people, especially those who were in favor of the unitary tax, explained that it passed so overwhelmingly because a lot of members of the legislature didn't understand what it did. You get any sense like that? I mean, Jerry Thompson actually calls out Liz Van Leeuwen in one of her. They say she has no idea what it is. did you get a sense of that?
Somewhat. It actually got a, if I recall correctly, it got a boost for different reasons from Grattan Curran, who by this time was the Democratic nominee for treasurer and wanted
mm-hmm.
to show his business bona fide to know how he was going to do that when moderate Republicans were still running the state. And
yeah.
Bill Rutherford, I think, was the treasurer appointee.
Yeah.
But so it got some votes because some Democrats saw it as a way to burnish their credentials
mm-hmm.
as a pro-business without looking.
Right.
But yeah, there's no doubt there's some legislators probably didn't really grasp the implications.
Yeah.
What they were doing.
Yeah.
But did so because Atiyah embraced it.
Yeah, yeah. Jerry writes a memo to him that says, here's who we've got in favor of it.
But it passed by huge...
It ended up passing. It was like 51-9 or something in the House. But Vic, on that same memo, just takes his pencil out and he writes in like 18 more names. he was nailing this one down. So, 84, interesting international dynamic, or national dynamic with the re-election of Reagan. In 83, in the fall, Vic is quoted in a front page story as talking about he might not support Reagan for re-election because Reagan and Vic blames Stockman. All the cuts in federalism were hitting Oregon and all those states hard. Did you pick up on that dynamic? See the frustrations of this Republican governor with a Republican president?
A little bit. I thought some of it was just to show that he had some independence
from
the guy in the White House.
Yeah.
Although, you know, when he did during the campaign, I had to laugh because then Kulongoski tried to say, well, it's Vic's support Reagan's policies or something like that, but it's causing the state's problems. I said, oh, come on, Ted.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, if you got to the root of that, it was mostly the Fed's policy, not Reagan's policies.
Yeah.
At least as far as the timber industry is concerned, about that in the housing market, but. I think there were some doubts that persisted, but I never saw Atiyah as a real rebel against.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Not like, say, Packwood, who his grumblings led him to end up being ousted from his senatorial campaign committee post.
Yeah.
But I don't recall Atiyah quite making the same kind of... I mean, Hatfield is Hatfield, but, you know, the two senators were much more open in their criticisms than Vic was.
Yeah, okay.
So if he was, it kept them somewhat muted.
Yeah, yeah. Which brings up another issue. Denny Miles hated it that Vic wouldn't toot his own horn. Did you find that to be the case? I mean, he's got media availabilities all the time. Did you find that he was... you know, different than other politicians you've covered at that level?
Well, I can go on what the more experienced member. He wasn't McCall. He wasn't,
right, yeah.
He wasn't that sort of person in terms of both his answers and then kind of his policy positions. Mm-hmm. I don't think Vic was that self-effacing, but he didn't have a tendency like a lot of politicians. So, yeah, from that respect, he was more restrained than, I think, if he were there today, I think it would, the circumstances would force him to be different.
Yeah, yeah.
He sure didn't until much later talk about the whole contingency planning for Rajneeshpuram.
Right. Did he talk about that while he was in office?
A little bit. It was mostly Frommeyer.
Yeah.
To some extent. It did seep into the Secretary of State's race that year.
Yeah.
That was one of the few years the Roseburg paper actually endorsed the Democrat.
Oh, yeah.
But I remember the pollsters said, there were three main candidates. One is Don Clark, the former KEZI, and Donna Zajon, and they were kind of trying to out-duel each other on.
Right.
And Robert said, you know, this is a lot of nonsense. We can take steps to prevent fraud, but let's not do these things. But,
yeah.
But, no, Vic never talked about that. I mean, of course, Frommeyer had the case
Right.
That Rajneeshpuram was not a legal city.
Right.
So.
Right.
So there were other state office holders that were more outspoken.
Yeah,
but.
Yeah. Did, because Vic, you know, he made it a total policy he wouldn't mention the Rajneeshis at all, unless he was asked at the media availabilities or whatever. Did you guys get a sense about what was going on behind the scenes? I mean, I'm doing the Rajneeshi section right now because there's a hell of a lot that went on behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And I think I now have the leverage to pry it out of people. there's a lot going on behind the scenes, but they're very careful that they control who knows that, including Norma was only invited to things where specifically there were things for her to do because they knew she would talk in an instant. Did you guys have a sense of that at all?
I did not personally.
Uh-huh.
Somebody like Chuck might know a lot more about that sort of stuff. Norma then was regarded as a loose cannon.
Oh, yeah. So. Yeah, absolutely. It's fascinating because she's a loose cannon, and then when she's running for governor against Goldschmidt, it's like she's just coy. You know, I should be governor because I know where the bodies are buried. So where are the bodies? I'll just know where they're buried. just very strange. Kind of out of character for her.
Yeah, I remember, what was it about that? It was the fate of the Department of Energy where she, I think she said she was going to abolish it and Vic had to go defend his decision to, I don't know if he created it, but obviously he had a vested stake.
Yeah.
And then I remember when Goldschmidt went after, the dry rot speech he gave to the Democratic State Convention.
Yeah.
And specifically named. The PUC and the insurance commissioner.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that did get Atiyah's goat.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, contributed to, had nothing to do with the sex stuff, of course, but that later came out, but that contributed to the bad relations between them.
Yeah. No, they just had really bad stuff. And then Vic went on Neil's first overseas trip, and Neil basically ignored him. So.
Well, I think there are other things in the transition where Goldschmidt ended up blowing up the staff.
It's fascinating because there are people who talk about Vic and budget and how small Vic's staff was as compared to Goldschmidt's, and it was smaller than Straub's as well. I've got the planning staff, what they wanted. When Vic came in, there's 37 positions. This is not a small staff.
Right.
And Vic also, in that first session, wanted the legislature to bring directly under his control on his personal budget, in effect, all the people, like the head of human services and stuff, who work for him but are on someone else's budget. So he would have had an immense staff, but they didn't go for it in some of these things. And Vic has later made it into a virtue. It's like, well, yeah, but that's not what you wanted in 79. when Goldschmidt came in the day after the inauguration, I was talking with Jill Horn. They got to work and no one had the key to the office. They just kind of neglected that stuff, which is very funny. Very funny. So let's go to the last big tax proposal. Vic finally decides that a sales tax has to be part of things. So did that ever have a prayer? I mean, going to the people, I don't know why somebody didn't tell them. Maybe they did. I haven't got the document. It's not going to fly.
I think its moment had passed.
Uh-huh.
I think Ed Fairley did, in retrospect, succeed what he set out to do,
mm-hmm.
frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
So by the time I mean, it did cost him his presidency, but that could have also been a generational thing. It was kind of the last of the behind the scenes Wheeler dealers.
Yeah.
So I mean, when Kids Hockey came in, it was a generational shift. But by the time they had all the forces in the legislature aligned, and they actually passed it out in like the middle of the session.
Mm-hmm.
Not that 85 didn't have a lot of things going for it, but they did do that. But I think at this moment it already passed.
Yeah.
That's aside from the ineptness of the campaign, but right. I think by the time they crafted something together, it was simply something that wasn't going to fly.
Mm-hmm.
Although, you know, now I've seen it from a longer perspective, and, you know, when things are bad, people don't necessarily want to change the system, but when things are good, people ask, why do we need to change the system?
Right, so exactly.
There's never a good answer for why should we change the system. But I think with Kitzhaber and Katz coming on and saying that that was going to be a priority for them to craft a proposal that even though his signature wasn't needed on it, he went along.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how were Kitz and Katz as leaders?
They worked with each other pretty well. I remember Kitzhaber did complain a little bit about Atiyah's approach to natural resources, and I'm not sure if it was he had some personal friction with Pat Amadeo or really Kitzhaber was more environmentalist to begin with as opposed to Atiyah trying to balance resources and environmental protection. I don't think they got any huge fights that last session either, because it was the first time Kitzhaber and Katz were together. Later, when Goldschmidt came in, he had no legislative experience. They often bailed Goldschmidt out situations that Goldschmidt created himself.
Yeah.
But of course, Atiyah had his own, you know, by that time. There's still a fair number of people who had worked with him who were still in the legislature at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So he still knew how to do that part of the job, irrespective of which people were in the legislative leadership positions.
Yeah. How did you see Atiyah working with his Republican caucuses, which are beginning to get more conservative?
Right. That's very interesting, because I know there were a few who were willing to give him the benefit of the doubt, but I noticed, especially when Larry Campbell came in 83, that more and more, even with the tax votes where Atiyah pretty much had to rely on Democrats, that there were still enough moderate Republicans around that Atiyah could wait, have some influence with them, but and the Republican leaders then were as willing to challenge him directly, at least in public stuff. That would be interesting today if we had a Republican governor and Republican majorities in the legislature. I'm not sure I'm going to hold my breath for that. But I think there'd be a lot more friction than... that was just beginning to happen. Interesting enough, during the 81 session, I know Bob Smith was really kind of looking to run for Congress, so he was
When I talked to Bob Smith about that long special session, he doesn't remember much because he was basically out the door already.
Right. Tony Baker is the guy. Tony, I think, had the sophistication to realize he got fun government some way, and there are certain functions that has to do, so he wasn't of that school. Let's burn it all down. And you're right, that mentality didn't quite take over then, although, you know, there were I remember in Senator there were people grumbling a little bit about Atiyah preserving some of the environmental agencies that had grown up that they didn't particularly like.
Yeah, the environmental agencies, and I also remember at that time the wilderness stuff, which is fascinating. Did you cover the wilderness saga?
I covered some where it got into Douglas County. I know there was a whole fight over Opal Creek, which I saw more from afar.
Which is fascinating because it's Vic's family's property.
Right.
So, yeah. So Pat Amadeo says that she doesn't think Vic was honest with her. Not that he was lying, but he was telling his nephew George one thing, and he was telling her another thing, and he never resolved that. So, yeah. The wilderness thing is fascinating because Vic was in favor of wilderness, but wilderness is forever. And so he, in his personal conservative way, wanted to work that through. And so at the beginning, when he comes in, he and Pat are talking about that, and they propose, it's like 60,000 acres of wilderness in response to a congressional offer of hundreds of thousands. And by the time it's done, it's over 1 million acres. Pat said she and Vic laughed about that forever, about, you know, it was really their first time really negotiating with the federal government and trying to balance things, and they just got steamrolled.
I remember it because there was a low low elevation wilderness proposed in right around the Steamboat Creek drainage in Douglas County, and the timber industry did not want that one at all. They were They acquiesced in some of the other proposals because they were higher elevation stuff, but that one they and. Imeson did come in and visit, actually. I didn't cover the visit. Somebody else on the News Review staff did. But Imeson did come in and visit all those areas personally. And I actually went to Boulder Creek. It was before it became a formal wilderness area, but it was obviously part of the debate because I went to see it for myself. But we kind of knew then Hatfield was the guy who was... And I think the timber industry folks knew that too. And obviously they needed his help on the contract. Controversy. So.
Did you cover anything that had to do with Columbia Gorge Scenic Area?
No.
Okay. Because that mixes all those kinds of issues together with feds and Washington.
Right.
And Washington turned out to be the problem.
Right.
And all of that. But, as Vic is moving towards the end of his time in office, he talked a lot with his very close staff about trying to institutionalize change so that it would continue on afterwards. Which is one reason he was so ticked off about Goldschmidt and the dry rot. Did you see that institutionalization? Was he successful in that from your point of view? Did you see that kind of move? Or was it just like any other governor?
I think a lot of it was like any other governor trying to preserve something. I think the two things, I've said this, but the two things I think last is he shared the ship of state through the recession.
Right.
And he did it in ways that, you know, like I say, you know, some of the cuts lasted, but, you know, he kind of did it in a way that, you know, I could have seen another governor easily slash and burn the whole state budget. He didn't do that. Maybe too much has been made of his, you know, supporting. Well, he obviously supported some tax increases. Intending to support the big income tax increase. I don't know if he ever imagined himself doing that, but and he needed a lot of Democratic help, but he did that. And I think also in retrospect, his wooing of the foreign trade. Much criticized at the time, but and, you know, there are different dimensions to it today that I'm sure he did not envision. But
one of the biggest is the all these high-tech things come in here, that's why Republicans are not going to win in this state. When I told Jerry that, you know, looking from where I sit as an analyst looking at this, he started the change that changed it so that Republicans are just never going to win again. And she just said, I wish he was alive right now. Just go up to him and say, you!
Well, he may not envision that either. I know. I mean, we talked about the special election with David Wu, and I know he would, I can't remember what conversation it was. He was kind of off put it when, or going one run his letter in support of Ralph Cornelius.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was telling Dan, I don't think he realizes how much his own home county has changed.
Oh, yeah.
Politically.
Yeah.
It's not the same place.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it turns out inside his family, there was a lot of change, too. His older twin brother, the one that's still alive, voted for Obama twice. And Vic is kind of like Mark Hatfield. You know, Mark Hatfield left and said, I don't think I'd win a primary. Vic never would admit that, but I don't think Vic would win a primary in a contested race as a Republican these days. So the times, they have changed. So any overall assessments of him? I mean, you just had two overall assessments of him, you know, the ship of state and things like that. Did you see much of him as an ex-governor?
I saw him occasionally. One thing that was, when I needed to get a perspective from an ex-governor, he was always handy to do that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He'd pick up the phone himself, or Robin was mm-hmm. in his office, would expedite the call.
Mm-hmm.
I do remember, God, it was basically my first year or two when I was at the Mail Tribune in Jackson County. I remember the then party chairman said, when the House finally went Republican mm-hmm. in 1990, well, I'd rather have the House go Republican than have Vicket here as governor. The same guy, however, got thrashed 2 years later in a primary with Brady Adams.
Yeah.
Although, you know, he was more conservative, but I think the district, they had more people from Josephine County in it.
Yeah.
Adams actually did a pretty good campaign.
Yeah.
I mean, there were just Adams signs everywhere. Plus, as I said, being from Josephine County, I think the voters, they wanted their own right. for a district that was... it might have been a little more Jackson County, Josephine, but, you know, as I said... GOP chairman got their comeuppance. But yeah, I did see from that point in the 90s that, with the exception of George Gilman, the party chairs became much more conservative.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, at some point in there, Vic actually runs for national committeeman because the other option was so conservative he just couldn't see that representing Oregon in any way. But, you know, he just did one term and bowed out of that. His point of view on the switch was all these new people started coming to Republican meetings and redefining what it meant to be a Republican. And he kind of thought things had set principles that would stay there forever. As he ran his personal life, he had set principles. Parties are a lot more malleable than that, but that's something that he just couldn't see. Just couldn't see. So anything else?
No, that's about it. As I say, I was during the years I started covering state government, I was in and out, so I didn't see a lot. Stuff that somebody like Chuck Bakes would have seen.
Yeah, but Chuck in retirement also he switches off a lot.
Yeah, he's. Kind of, he got out at the right time, and now he's been out now like 10 years.
Yeah, yeah. I couldn't remember, and he couldn't remember when he retired either, but he says the five special sessions basically drove him around the bend.
Yes, and I remember 2005 second went into August, and yeah. I think after the the one 2 years earlier went almost to Labor Day, and
yeah,
he could say he had enough.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting talking to people. Did you know Norm Smith?
Yes.
Who ended up down in Roseburg. But Norm Smith, several others, have just talked about when all those special sessions hit, just how hard it was on professional life, family life, and everything else. That's one reason Norm Smith, who had illusions of being the state treasurer and things, got out. So.
Yeah, Kip Lawbert of Ashland got out 84.
Mm-hmm.
These special sessions were... He was a solo practitioner, so it was...
Yeah.
Tough for him.
Yeah. Great, well, thank you very much.
Jim, there's one other thing I got to mention.
I
think I talked to you about this earlier, but in essence, the partnership, the EO people don't like me, so I'm not going to be covering the state government for that partnership. Pamplin's offered me a different position than...
Uh-huh.
I'm not sure if this is going to be cobbled together or not, but the Washington and Clackamas County commissioners, plus I'm hoping to add maybe like the federal delegation since the Salem Bureau.
Washington and Clackamas will drive you to drink. Clackamas especially.
Especially, yes.
Yeah.
They've actually had that. It was originally Washington County and Portland Cops, and I said, who would want that kind of job?
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, the EO folks want somebody to have jazzed up newsletter items, and I'm not producing that kind of stuff for them.
Yeah, yeah.
They hired their own reporter, and well, she's had 10 years experience. This is her first day, and she's writing things about, you know, tax credits at the Deferring Energy and the geology agencies. She's not carrying the range of things I am, but they seem to want that kind of stuff. So, I may not be totally out the because the Pamplin Pamplin himself, but the guy who's heading the newspapers division said, maybe I can cover some of the Washington Clackamas County legislators. Although I look at some and say, why would I really want to cover those guys? But
yeah.
I think he was basically saying, if it were up to me, I think you'd be doing fine for our papers, but not for what Steve Forrester and those guys want.
Yeah.
I still have doubts that they can make a newsletter, a co-op newsletter. It's just too much that gets out in other ways much more quickly.
Yeah, it's speed, and newsletters are always suspect, too. More power to them, I guess. I've got to tell you, reading the Capitol Press for about the past 4 years has been just a hoot. They're just, you know, if they find a wolf, they want to shoot it. And occasionally they will run the story that tells the truth about wolves. Wolves hardly kill anything compared to the ranger's own dogs, compared to all these other things. But,
well, that the editor... The editor of that is the one who basically gave me the X.
Oh, yeah.
Now, technically, he can fire me because I don't work for the EO media group, but he kind of let it be known that he really didn't want me there. I do challenge his view of politics or the legislature. He's very cynical. And not that the state does everything right. I'm not stupid about that, but he kind of watch those kinds of stories.
Yeah. And you can see that with their straight news coverage, too. There's just an assumption that what Ted Ferrioli says is right. I got to tell you.
Well, I told Hillary that he's not the smart one in that caucus.
No. No. But that's just what they do. So, good. Thank you very much.
All right. So, I...